This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Friday, March 29th. I'm Julia Caulfield. In today's headlines, Norwood appoints Board of Trustee seats. Mountain Village talks VCA expansion. New director discusses state's art economy and a mountain weather forecast. Earlier this week, the Norwood Town Board of Trustees met to settle the issue of its future members. On Tuesday, the trustees held a special meeting to appoint Sean Fallon and Michael Grady to two seats up for election on the board. Fallon already serves on the board and received another four-year term. On the other hand, this will be Grady's first political endeavor. He owns Alpine Wellness in Norwood and Telluride and has lived on the Mesa since 2013. Grady takes over the seat from Jamie Schultz, co-owner of Dark Sky Pizza. Schultz had intended to seek another 4 years as trustee, but stepped back, citing professional and family obligations. If a seat is contested, the town holds an election to decide the makeup of its leadership, but with two candidates vying for two seats, the board canceled the election at its Tuesday meeting and appointed Grady and Fallon. Mountain Village's Village Court apartment expansion is well underway, with two new buildings and 35 new units opening up this year. VCA's West Building, or Building 15, has a total of 14 units, a mix of three and four bedrooms. In a new program, Mountain Village is moving forward with a master lease program to allow businesses in town to rent to their employees.
We have the opportunity to master lease to businesses nine of those 14 units, and those would be nine four-bedroom, two-bath units.
That's Assistant Town Manager Michelle Haynes speaking at a town council meeting last week. Mountain Village will conduct a lottery to determine which businesses get a master lease, with preference given to smaller businesses.
Understanding that small businesses may be impacted greater if they don't have housing for their employees. In some cases, when you're down one employee, you might have to close the door, as opposed to a larger business who could probably fill in with some other staff persons.
The master lease will run on a 12-month lease. A business can renew each year with good standing.
We're recommending the master lease monthly rent be $3,600. That roughly breaks down to $900 a bedroom.
That's for a four-bedroom. A three-bedroom would be $2,700 a month. Haynes notes employers would not be allowed to rent the apartments for more than the cost of the master lease. The lease stipulates a minimum occupancy of four unrelated individuals with a maximum occupancy of six people per unit.
The intent is that we just don't want like one family who, like kind of gaming the system, and then we're not making it available to employees. Mm-hmm.
Employee tenants will need to qualify for a deed restriction. To qualify for a master lease, a business must have a physical address in Mountain Village with an active business license and a need for employees. However, there will not be a business license fee associated with the lease.
We structured this that in the event that a smaller business didn't have six employees potentially to fill one unit, that they could partner with another small business in Mountain Village.
Haynes notes, based on a survey, they already have interest in the units from local businesses.
We're really excited to offer this to our businesses. It's been something that particularly we've heard from every business, the strong need for housing. So it's coming at a good time.
Mountain Village will hold an open house for interested businesses at the end of April, with a lottery taking place in May. Mountain Village anticipates residents will be able to move in the second half of June. Telluride's Art District is one of 30 creative districts across Colorado. They're sprinkled from Sterling to Grand Junction, Fort Collins to Ridgeway. Last fall, when Josh Blanchard was named the new director of Colorado Creative Industries, Colorado's agency for the arts, he embarked on a tour of those districts. Those travels brought him to Telluride this week, and he stopped by the station to chat with KOTO's Gavin McGough about his new role and his background at the intersection of policy and creativity.
You come from a background as county commissioner.
I do.
In Summit County. Do you have a specific arts background?
I do have an arts background. I started in arts education, performing arts education. Both my undergrad and graduate degree is in interdisciplinary performance and humanities. And so I do come from this from a very broad arts background, and then specifically have a background in performing arts and in theater. I ran, I was the executive director of a nonprofit theater organization in Summit County for a little over a decade.
What was it like to bring your art background to local government?
Artists tend to be resourceful, be efficient, know how to get things done in a tight time frame or with limited resources. Artists also often are at the pulse of what's happening within communities. I took office in January of 2021, and so we were in the midst of, obviously, the pandemic. And so I think it served me well.
What's it been like to come on this new job at the state level?
It's been exciting for me to be able to be in service to the entire state, all 64 counties, all of our communities. We have an amazing state. It's beautiful. So many resources. So many folks want to be here. And so I feel that it's such a great honor and opportunity. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done to continue to support the role that the creative sector plays throughout the state.
One of your signature programs is collaborating with different creative districts in Colorado. Tell me about those.
There are 30 state-certified creative districts within across the state of Colorado. And these certified creative districts really serve their communities in different ways, but are meant to be a toolbox so that communities have the resources and the infrastructure to support artists, art nonprofits, and the creative sector. Telluride is one of the designated creative districts. So we have the ability, of course, to work with the great folks here.
Your visit to Telluride right now, is that part of a broader tour of the different arts districts? Have you visited others, and what's that been like?
I have. Coming into this role in September, one of my goals was to visit the different creative districts and arts districts across the state to get a sense of the great stuff that's happening. One of the things that I've really been excited about is to see how each community is different. The creative districts really come from within the communities themselves. When we talk about Telluride, Breckenridge, Salida, where it's the integration of outdoor recreation and the arts. When I think about rural communities, Eastern Plain communities, we see the arts and service in similar ways, how communities come together, for an artistic experience, for a concert or for an activity. And then, of course, when we look at arts districts in more metro or urban settings, Santa Fe Art District, Rhino in Denver, these are really exciting districts that are very much defined geographically within a part of those larger metro areas that serve, that specific community. Certainly, they have broader reach, but really seeing how those communities come together, defining arts and culture and industry and the economic impacts that the arts can have.
Well, Josh, thank you so much for joining us. Do you have any closing thoughts on sort of the state of the arts in Colorado?
In Colorado, we value the arts. Study after study shows that Coloradans participate at some of the highest levels in making art and attending art. And it's a part of our DNA. It's a part of who we are. It's a part of what makes this state so great. And Telluride is doing an excellent job. And so it's exciting to be here and look at the work that's going on. And I'll definitely be back.
That was the director of Colorado Creative Industries, Josh Blanchard, speaking with KOTO News about his new role with the state.
According to data from the Environmental Protection Agency, wasted food is the single most common material sent to landfills. When it hits the dump, organic materials produce methane, a potent greenhouse gas. The EPA reports 60% of landfill methane originates from food waste. Diverting scraps to compost can reduce those levels of methane production, and composting produces black gold. gorges valuable soil, which can be reapplied in agriculture. This year, Brew and Waste, EcoAction Partners in San Miguel County, are partnering on a composting pilot program to bring composting to a greater number of area residents. This coming Tuesday, April 2nd, stop by the Smuggler's Brew Pub to hear about how the program is going and what's to come. The event begins at 3:30 p.m. and snacks will be available. Just make sure you clear your plate. Rico's Town Park is getting an upgrade thanks in part to a Great Outdoors Colorado grant from the state. Rico received nearly $600,000 to help revitalize the local park along the Dolores River and at the Rio South Grande Southern Railroad trailhead. The funds will go towards upgrading and expanding outdoor equipment on the playground, creating a permanent bathroom, multimodal path, pavilion power and lighting, and skate park features. Rico was one of 16 projects across the state to receive funding through the grant. In total, Great Outdoors Colorado awarded over $7 million to support projects enhancing quality of life and access to the outdoors. The Colorado Department of Transportation started roadwork on Highway 550 between Ridgeway and Montrose this week. Construction will take place along an 8-mile stretch of road from Ridgeway State Park to Kelowna. The project will include improvements to the highway, with road widening for the construction of a southbound passing lane. The project also includes a 3-mile stretch of wildlife safety improvements, including the installation of a large wildlife underpass at Billy Creek, wildlife fencing, earthen escape ramps, and deer guards. CDOT says the goal of the project is to reduce vehicle wildlife crashes. Work began this week and is scheduled to run through the end of 2024. Work hours will run from sunrise to sunset, Monday through Friday. Traffic impacts will include lane closures and single-lane alternating traffic, and narrow lanes with reduced shoulders. The speed limit will be reduced throughout the work zone, and drivers should expect up to 15-minute delays. Lawmakers in Colorado are working to allow victims of child sexual abuse to pursue a civil claim against abusers and organizations, regardless of when the abuse occurred. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, Clark Adamidis of KSUT and KSJD has more.
The Colorado Supreme Court ruled that to remove the statute of limitations for all child sexual abuse claims, a constitutional amendment is needed. That's what lawmakers are working on now.
The statute of limitations really limits how long survivors have to come to a place where they feel strong enough to move forward.
Gina Lopez is a member of the Ute Mountain Ute tribe, and she works for the Colorado Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
This really allows an opportunity to have that time to process through their trauma. Validating a survivor is so powerful, and not that that's going to fix everything or change their course in their life. But it's a huge component of getting that wheel going in terms of healing.
Daisy Bluestar is a member of the Southern Ute tribe. She explains how common child sexual abuse is in tribal communities.
One of the places that it might benefit our Native communities would be boarding school survivors. Unfortunate situations, the Catholic churches and Boy Scouts. We know as Indigenous people that this has been some of the places where a lot of our children had been abused growing up.
Chairman of the Southern Ute Indian Tribe, Melvin Baker, announced his endorsement of the amendment. Chairman Baker said in a statement, quote, "Sexual violence has been a tool of colonization, with generations of Indigenous children experiencing sexual abuse in boarding school systems. The practice of sexual violence towards Indigenous people and youth continues, with Indigenous women experiencing sexual violence at higher rates than all other races reported. Many of these are committed by non-Indigenous perpetrators," unquote. Community organizers like Gina Lopez and Daisy Bluestar are advocating for support from their representatives, especially Republican State Senator Cleve Simpson, who represents the Southwest corner. As the amendment awaits a vote in the Senate, advocates say just one Republican vote is needed to pass the measure. If it passes in the Senate, it will go to the House. Then it would go to voters for a ballot question in November before a change can be made to the Constitution. For KSUT and KSJD, I'm Clark Adamitis.
On Thursday, the city of Denver cleared out an immigrant camp at Elitch Gardens, an amusement park at the edge of downtown. About 60 people, mostly from Venezuela, have camped there for several months in the shadow of the water slides and roller coasters. The city had given advance notice of the encampment sweep, and on Wednesday, the day before the clear out, the residents and local volunteers packed up tents and belongings. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KGNU Sam Fuqua brings us this report from the camp. We'll hear first from Kazia Lozano from the Migrant Care Coalition.
We've been through a number of very traumatic sweeps, a lot with these same community members as well. So we're trying to head it off early. We don't want to have to deal with the cops tomorrow. So we're trying to clear everybody out, playing some music, getting some relaxed vibes going, making sure that folks feel comfortable and not rushed. Because as soon as the cops show up at 6 a.m. tomorrow, it's always devolved into chaos. So we're just trying to be proactive about it, get folks to a safe spot comfortably without any rushing and just with our support. I think we have a little bit over 60 individuals living at this encampment. Unfortunately, starting a week and a half ago, we started accepting families as well because the city started kind of cutting off resources. Folks were getting kicked out of refuge. And then there's some weird rules about if they've been here for a certain number of days, they can no longer access services. So we've seen the camp expand a lot in just the past 2 weeks alone as the city's been closing down shelters. So we've grown exponentially. And now hopefully that we'll be able to get everything done by today. But yeah, we have a pretty large encampment here.
Where will they go?
Our only option right now for folks, as we are being strategic about potential new camping locations, is to get them put up at the Denver Community Church. They have an open refuge site for migrants, so we're dropping some folks off there. But the process kind of looks like going through individually. I mean, these are individual people's homes, so we're making sure that we're treating them with dignity and respect as we pack up their things. We're going to make sure everything is super well labeled so they know where they're stuff is going. They're allowed to take 2 bags with them to the shelter, so we'll allow them that. And then any of their extra stuff that they do want to keep, we just have volunteers, like, it's going to live in my garage, it's going to live in Amy's garage, it's going to live in different people's houses that folks will continue to have access to.
Including the tents?
Yeah, the tents as well. We want to salvage as much as possible. Especially, that's also part of why we're here today. The city, on the notice that they serve these migrants, let them know that if they were still here tomorrow, all of the tents would be thrown in the trash and would not be able to be salvaged. So we're just trying to make sure we get our outdoor gear because we know this is going to be an ongoing need. The shelters are going to continue to close. Folks are going to continue to have nowhere to live. So we want to be prepared for future encampments that need to happen.
The shelters are going to continue to close and people are going to have nowhere to live. This is an impossible cycle, and yet this cycle is repeating itself.
Yeah, I mean, there's truly no other options. I mean, we've heard constantly from the city that their 2 options are rent your own apartment, which is, to me, honestly, goofy. I have lived in Denver for over 5 years now, and I still have trouble paying for my apartment. So to tell these people to just find an apartment is not a real solution. And the other option that they're being pushed towards is to get a bus ticket to another city. So it's I'm a Texan as well, like a lot of transplants, but it's starting to feel a little Greg Abbott-y that we're trying to push these folks out of our state, essentially. And doing the exact same thing that Democrats were faulting Republicans for in other states.
Have you gotten to know the people in the camp, and where are they from?
Yeah, so the vast majority of these folks are from Venezuela. We have a couple Peruvians and a couple Colombianos, so from Colombia. I'm here at least once a week, more often than not a couple times a week, just hanging out. These folks have been through an incredibly traumatic journey to get here. So often, more often than not, they just need a kind, familiar Latina face to like speak to them in their own language. So that's what I come up here and do. We established this camp back at the end of January, and it's just grown into its own little tight-knit community. People cook here daily. We have volunteers out here daily. I have been helping people with paperwork and legal stuff as much as I can. I mean, they're our neighbors, so I count the vast majority of these people as friends. Like, we talk regularly throughout the day. If I'm not here, we're texting. But yeah, they're family now.
this camp is in the shadow of this large amusement park where families come to be entertained, not right now, but soon as it warms up. The giant water slide is literally right above the encampment, the roller coasters, the Ferris wheel.
It strikes me every time I roll up. I'm like, oh, I've been here with friends. I've enjoyed this park, and now I'm helping people just try to fight for survival outside of it. And the reason that this camp is being moved is because the park is opening. So they're trying to remove the eyesore before the tourists come through and all of the families come through. But yeah, it's a pretty interesting location for sure.
That's Kezia Lozano of the Migrant Care Coalition. We also met Juan Carlos Piotelicos, a delivery driver from Peru who's been in Denver 5 months, two of those in the Ilitch encampment.
I'm just moving these people today because, you know, we don't want to lose our stuff. We don't want to see the city. This sweep is, I'm trying to be different than all the sweeps maybe you see. So we're just doing that.
Yeah, it's different in the sense that you want to get ahead of the sweep.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So we're just trying to do that.
What is life like in this camp?
You know, from most people, it's good. I know that we are doing this because we don't have the permit of work, right? Because if we have the permit of work, you're not going to see any tent here. Because we was going to work. But how is it right now? We don't have it, so we just try to survive our lives here.
And I understand because you speak English, you're really the point person for most, if not all, of the people living in this camp. Mm-hmm. How are you helping them?
Well, you know, they see me like a leader. So sometimes I have to take decisions how I'm taking right now. I know not all are agree with me, but they follow me. So I think that's a good thing. I'm just trying to do my best. And yeah, that's the difference that make them to me because I know English and Spanish.
Well, this camp is unusual in that it's right next to this giant amusement park, Ilitch Gardens, and the city is moving it along because the amusement park is going to open.
Right, that's right. That's why it's also the camp is, you know, it's now sweeping because it's soon it's going to open. That thing, so that's why we're just thinking, you know, we're just trying to collaborate. But if we collaborate, we need solution for us also. That's what the city also says to us, so let's see if that, you know, it's true.
Just briefly, what would the solution look like?
Giving work to these people, giving housing. That's the two things we are asking, just work. The first one, work. The second, housing.
Anything else you would like the people listening to this to know?
This is, it was a beautiful encampment. We just try to survive here. We don't make any mistakes. We just taking everything clean. So the city also have to know that we are not bad guys.
The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low in the mid-20s. Saturday should be mostly sunny with isolated snow showers and a high around 40 degrees. Winds could gust as high as 40 miles per hour. Saturday night, there's a 50% chance of rain and snow showers with mostly cloudy skies and a low around 30. Winds could gust as high as 50 miles per hour. Sunday calls for snow showers with a high around freezing. Sunday night should be mostly cloudy with a low around 20. This has been the news for Friday, March 29th. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 970-728-3206. We would like to thank everyone who donated to CODO during our Winter Fund Drive. A huge thank you to Ashley Berard, Tracy Boyce, Suzanne Galler, Todd Hopgood, Denise Light, Kristen Permakoff, Christine Tildy, Joe and Dan Shaver, Kara MacArthur, Amy Mendonca, Craig Hess, Maria Flores, Thalia Gonzalez, Cameron Brooks, Mark Charles, Dan and Lori Collins, Mary Jo Guerraro, Joan Knowles, Ethan Nasolski, Paul Railts, Don Swearinga, Tommy Wintz, Kristen Bergman, Heather Chase, Aaron Dace, Ford Drummond, Renee Goldstein, Scott Keating, David Roberts, Will and Hillary Thompson, Cindy Wyzinski, Tyler Lucas, John Massey, Gloria McKittrick, and Marilyn Michaels Allen. Thank you all so much.